Only smart people get up early enough to listen to the Francine Marie Show. So thanks for listening, smarty pants.
Good morning, campers! Pick up your coffee cup, make a cup of tea, pour yourself a beer. Hair of the dog, it's the Francine Marie Show!
Good morning, thanks for joining us. Since COVID-19 pandemic stay-at-home orders, there might be a spike in pregnancies or even marriage proposals. Well, before you walk down that virtual aisle with your boo, there might be some questions that you need to ask him or her, but most importantly, you. Where do you see this relationship going, right? What are your thoughts on children? Because that always changes. How do you handle stress together? How do you handle conflict with in-laws, your future in-laws? Is your relationship kind of strong with gambling, drugs, and alcohol, right? How do you guys manage your finances? We have a, I'm going to call him a marriage expert, Gary Coggin with Coggin Law. And I'm calling you the expert on marriage, Gary, because we always come to you before we want to do it and after we did it.
That's right. Unfortunately, more people come my way after they've done it rather than coming for some advice and counsel prior to entering into a marriage.
I don't know if you just started premarital consults, but what made you do it? Because we are coming to you after the fact going, why did I do that? Why did I do that?
Yeah, more and more, especially millennials. In the past, I would hear from folks that they felt like a premarital consult was planning to fail rather than looking at the possible liabilities that come with marriage and recognizing that marriages, like many things, sometimes do come to an end, no matter how much we try to make that marriage work. And more and more people, especially the millennials, they want to know. They don't want to hide their eyes from reality. They want to know what happens, you know, if I enter into this union and it doesn't work. Frankly, they want to know how things will go down if the biggest business decision, and that's what it is. It's a business relationship because of the effect that marriage has upon your finances and your assets and debts. They want to know what would happen if they did get a divorce.
Might be, Gary, because the generation before them, moms and dads, aunts and uncles, they saw them shuffling kids off on the weekend. You know, hey, what's happening? Why are you so sad? And my mom and dad are getting a divorce, right? They didn't want that feeling to happen again, maybe?
Right. No, I totally agree. Except that, you know, I think our parents, in the generations before, there was more of a hang in there mentality, that's what they were supposed to do. And more people are seeing themselves that this life is an opportunity for them to be happy. Yes, they're going to put in the work that it requires to have a successful marriage, but it's not written in stone that they have to hang in there to their detriment throughout their life, especially if something happens like adultery bad things such as that.
Right, right. Oh, how about this? Ding, ding, ding. They call it gray divorce, where you've been married for so long and then you wake up and you're like, I don't even know who you are.
Yes. Yes. You know, that's unique more and more as even some of the, you know, older demographics are going through marriage and deciding that they don't want to be married anymore. You know, they're finding themselves 20, 30, 40 years through marriage and waking up and that they don't want to be with that partner anymore. You know, that carries quite a bit different consequences than it does for somebody in their 20s or 30s, just by the mere fact that they have probably planned for retirement with that person. Mm-hmm. Everything they've done has been geared towards saving two people. And so when we talk about gray divorce, there's some unique circumstances that exist in terms of the effect on Social Security, possibly, and how that might have to be divided between the two. The effect on the retirement accounts and what is the best way to divide the assets and minimize the impact upon the balance and the value of those assets. And there's ways that we can do that by taking a specific look at what the assets are, what vehicle they're contained in, meaning is it an IRA? Or is it a 401k? We can move monies a lot easier through an IRA than we can through a 401k, for example. There are a lot of different things for people to consider. There's also usually a lot more assets involved as a general rule just by the fact that you've had more time to accumulate those assets. On the other hand, there might be a lot more debt as well.
Wow, there's so much to consider because, you know, they had the kids and they had the college and they had this, that, and the other, and maybe a surgery in between, right?
Exactly.
You know, to be an attorney, now that you're explaining what you do, and it sounds like you really, really care, and that's what we want. We want an attorney that really cares about us, a family law attorney. You seem to be really good in relationships, reading between the lines, and you also seem to be really great with finance. It makes the world go round, right?
No, it does. And my math teacher in elementary and high school would laugh that good at finance. I don't know if I necessarily am good at finance, but I definitely never expected myself to be putting together comprehensive asset and debt charts and doing calculations. But my math teacher was right, despite my objections that I would need math.
Right.
You know, as to the psychology aspect of it, yes, you know, our degrees or the licensing says attorney and counselor at law. Sometimes you feel like after having done family law for 18 plus years, that you could in fact be a therapist, in the sense that you're having to deal, with the psychological aspect of things as well. Sometimes people come to us and it runs the gamut from those who are ready and they are initiating this process, to those that it's being forced upon them and they're not necessarily accepting of it. And you have to work through those emotions. It's not just leading them through the gates. You have to be responsive no matter what time of day it is. I'm not very good at drawing those boundaries for myself. It's good for the client, but it's not good for me. But I've always said that I will do this as long as I am fully engaged. There's a right way to do things, a halfway manner to do things, and a wrong way. And in my view, the only way to do this job is to do it the right way, and that means being responsive to them. And the problems come when you have to balance not only the case, but the reality is you have to also balance their emotions and where they are in the process, because the process cannot move along in a successful manner that will accomplish their goals, whether they know what those goals are or not yet, being in the fog of emotion. But you can't move forward unless they're ready.
I like that advice. If you're just now tuning in, that's the voice of Gary Coggin with Coggin Law. He's talking about relationships and divorce. We just got off the topic of gray divorce because you've got this population of baby boomers who are moving to these fabulous, I call them cruise ships on land, that cost so much money per month. And, you know, it's cheaper to keep her.
Cheaper to keep her. I heard that 18 years ago, and it is still used.
And when it comes to relationships and child custody, wow, that's a sticky one. That's like quicksand sometimes, because the first words out of our mouths when things are not rolling right in a marriage is, I'm going to get a divorce, right? And then the next thing is child custody. And then you're in this, I call it quicksand. You just don't know if you're going to swim or sink.
Now, I think what's important for folks to know about custody is despite who did what, because I hear this so much, despite who ended the marriage, whether there was adultery, whether there was financial misconduct, it is really hard sometimes for folks, once again, in the fog of that emotion and maybe having been humiliated, the anger that goes along with the process as they work through the emotion of loss. It is really hard sometimes for folks to understand when I tell them that the misbehavior, unless it was directly upon the children, meaning abuse or something like that, physical abuse, the misbehavior as between the husband and wife is not going to trickle down to the custodial decisions, either made by the court or which are made by the parties and their respective attorneys in a mediation, a more amicable setting. In other words, the court is going to look at only what is in the best interests of the children as a general rule. And in looking at the best interests of the children, they're going to look at how the parents conducted themselves and during the marriage, who was the primary caregiver, if there was one. That's obviously not as prevalent as it was 30, 40, 50 years ago. You know, take a leave it to Beaver. Mom was at home. Dad went to work. She was the primary caretaker. That's not really the case anymore. Usually both parties claim to be joint custodians. That is one thing I would say. The other thing, really important for people to understand, that there's two types of custody. There's physical custody. That's where the children reside on a weekly and month-to-month basis, the custody schedule. And there's legal custody. Those are two different things. Legal custody is how is the decision-making attributed. Do they share decision-making? We call that joint legal custody. For the big four, meaning health, education, religion, extracurricular activities, or does one parent have sole decision-making power? In other words, sole legal custody. That's very rare. As a general rule, two folks, unless there is something extremely off, are going to share joint legal custody. And once again, the things that happened as a general rule between husband and wife are not going to affect how the custodial, both physical and legal, is attributed and bifurcated.
Okay. And I know that you said, you know, something that's not forgiven, well, in my eyes, is definitely child abuse, right? So I know a lot of folks may come to you or end up in court because, like, this parent over here, whoever it is abusing the child, and we can't have that person have any kind of custody, right?
Yeah. Well, it's gotten tricky. And again, you know, it would be not the truth to say that there aren't different types of punishments, that different families culturally, et cetera, believe in different things. We're in a day of age, quite frankly, where, you know, spanking is looked down upon. I look back to being in elementary school in the late 70s, I guess it would be, and I recall seeing a paddle on my principal's wall. That would never fly in the year 2020. And he used it. I often wonder whether there was some sort of waiver signed by my parents or whether that was just the way things were. But no, most certainly, actual abuse of a child would be one of those grounds which would cause a court to issue a fairly rare thing whereby one parent has primary, if not sole, physical and legal custody.
Yeah. Oh, you know what I forgot to ask you about? And we forget about this in marriage, right? The alienation of affection. Explain that to us.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, and that's a great question. You know, I often tell people that there's the concept of alienation of affection and there's the concept of criminal conversation. You often see those together, almost like in the criminal law, assault and battery, per se.
Mm-hmm.
But they're two different things, and they could be brought as separate claims. But here's where it is. In the state of North Carolina, which I believe, don't quote me on this, the number keeps on going down, North Carolina is one of three or four states remaining out of our 50, which will allow a person to bring a claim for alienation of affection and or criminal conversation. It's an unpopular claim. Alienation of affection is a person alleging that another person has alienated the feelings of their spouse, in this case, from them. And criminal conversation is an allegation that that person had sex with their spouse. So essentially, they call it in the old law a heart balm tort, shorthand meaning it is a way for you to seek relief for your heart having been wounded, you having lost your spouse due to the actions of another. The problem with the claim and the reason it's gotten booted out of many other states is if you look at the underlying premise behind the claim, you're almost saying that you own your spouse if you can sue someone for having taken them from you. And that's a constitutional challenge that's been going on for years. It's not made it through yet. Our legislature hasn't abolished the law. But we do see quite often people asking us if they can sue a third party, is what we call the third party, a paramour, a lover, for having essentially stolen the affections of their spouse and having had sexual relations with their spouse. To be clear, that claim is alive and well in the state of North Carolina. but we're just down to a handful of states that still allow you to do so.
I guess we could call her a slut or a whore, too. Just kidding. But it's right?
There are the he's, too. It goes both ways. You know, I currently have a case where everybody's suing everybody. Two couples, cross claims, et cetera, et cetera. So it happens.
If you're just not tuning in, we're talking to the esteemed, the amazing Gary Coggin with Coggin Law. We're talking about divorce, getting married, child custody. Oh, let's do this one, Gary. Drum roll, please. Child support.
Yes, and I was hoping you would ask that because I forgot, got carried away, being long-winded as I am. Child support. There are a lot of misconceptions in regards to child support, but here's the bottom line. In North Carolina, as a general rule, there are caveats about everything I say, but as a general rule for the purposes of our talk today, you know, child support is going to be calculated on one or two worksheets, either a worksheet A or a worksheet B. If you're on a worksheet A, if you have primary physical custody of the children, you're on a worksheet B if you share joint physical custody, more of an even allocation of overnight. And overnights are the key. If you go to any child support calculator, there's actually one on our website that can walk you through it. And the way child support is calculated is once you decide which worksheet you're on, which is only a reflection of the custodial schedule, you then plug in your gross income for all sources, and you plug in the other parent's gross income from all sources. And by all sources, I mean all sources, not just the W-2 you get, but any rental proceeds, dividends, maybe past alimony, any prizes, gifts, recurring gifts from your parents. That's a big one, where maybe somebody will say, well, I only make $3,000 a month gross. And I say, wait a minute, your parents give you $12,000 a year. Well, then we need to add another $1,000 per month. But you merely plug in gross incomes of each party, plug in either parent's column an amount for the health insurance premium that might be paid for the children. You might plug in as well any work-related child care expenses in a column, and you hit click, and that's how child support is calculated. There have been rumors that alimony also has a calculator. That is false. Only child support actually has a calculator, which is produced by the legislature, I believe, every 3 years. That takes into account inflation, other monetary and fiscal matters, to come to a calculation of what child support should be for children. To be clear, there's a child support calculator for child support, but there is no calculator for the concept of alimony.
Okay. And alimony is only if you're married. I know each state is different. So if I want alimony, I have to be married, or is it common law? Bring us up to date.
Nope, you have to be married. No, you're right. You're right. In the state of North Carolina, I get that question a couple times a week. Common law marriage being, just for those listeners, and I'm most certainly not an expert on it because it's not in North Carolina. We do not recognize a common law marriage, but essentially a common law marriage is one that is looked upon as a marriage because you reached a certain amount of time together. And we don't even need to discuss it because if you do not get married and procure a marriage license from downtown, then you are not married. And yes, alimony is only available to those that have been married. And I'd like to just say, you know, I don't know what age everybody is here listening, obviously, but I'm of the age that I used to watch Dallas, Falcon Crest, Knott's Landing, all those nighttime soap opera shows. I guess they'd be back in the 80s.
Right.
And I think people got a misconception of alimony. A lot of times people will come into my office and just immediately go straight to, well, he cheated, or, well, she did this. And they think that's the factor, but it's really not. It's a three-step analysis. You first have to decide, when we're looking at alimony, whether there was a dependent spouse in the marriage and whether there was a supporting spouse. In other words, if each party makes $40,000, the analysis is over. It doesn't matter what bad happened in the marriage. Dependent supporting is going to be more like he makes 20, she makes 100. Okay, we have that. We got to go to box number two. Even then, in this particular case, he would have to show a need, that he has a need each month, that he has a deficit. He can't pay his monthly expenses. And she would want to show that she doesn't have any money left over after the payment of her reasonable expenses. If we can cross through that threshold, it's only then that we get to number three, which is essentially, okay, then we cross through question one and two, how much per month and for how long? What I want to make clear is that's where marital misconduct and the length of the marriage and the health of the parties and the education of the parties, ability to retrain, get a new job, that's where all those factors come into play. So the first factor is not bad behavior. That's one of the factors after you cross through a series of questions to even get to whether alimony should be payable.
Wow. Okay, but what about the prenup? Where'd that come into play?
Well, the prenup would be possibly an outcome of somebody, to loop back to this part, of a premarital consult. You know, I said before that people were very resistant over the years. My age, a little younger and older, I'm 47, were very resistant to prenups, very resistant to premarital consults. You know, as I said, you know, at the top of this, you know, millennials are more and more willing to have a premarital consult because they're open to the idea of knowing versus hiding their eyes to it, the consequences of what might happen if their biggest business decision of their life does not work out, i.e. marriage. And so when we're looking at a prenup, a couple could come in and have a premarital consult with me. I can never represent either one of them ever again. But they could come in and have their consult. They may leave and they may just say, you know what, honey, that was a really good suggestion that we should exchange documents each year to show each other what we're contributing to our retirement account, because you heard Gary's story about how he had a lady the other day that didn't want to divide her retirement account with her husband, and she was angry about that because he hadn't contributed to his retirement account, and she was out of luck because she should have kept track of that, and she was going to have to split her retirement account with her husband as a marital asset. So the point is, they may come out of the meeting and just decide on some informal arrangements that they learned from that consult, or they may decide to enter into a prenuptial agreement, which is merely an agreement which serves to bypass the laws that would apply under the state of North Carolina if they went through a divorce. They could place in their prenuptial agreement things like, we shall each contribute to the maximum to our retirement accounts each year, and we shall exchange documents each year to verify. It could say neither one of us will be paying alimony to the other in the event of divorce. It could say neither retirement account that we bring into the marriage will become a marital asset. I tell folks, you can put anything in a prenup you want to. It's a formal contract, which will provide some navigation for some, if not all, issues, if anything were to happen with your marriage. But to be clear, you cannot contract by a prenuptial or postnuptial agreement as to children. That is one point I would like to make. That just can't happen. The state is always allowed to intervene in regards to custody and child support issues.
Okay, got it. And then, you know, when you say child support, all I can think of is mediation, right? You have to go through these layers, and it's an onion, and sometimes it stinks and it makes you cry. Yep. But mediation is important.
Yep. Mediation is important, and mediation occurs whether there's been a lawsuit filed or not. Oftentimes, many of my cases, you know, I exchange letters with opposing counsel, usually, sometimes an opposing party that's chosen not to be represented. And we can exchange documents, and possibly I build a comprehensive separation, property settlement, alimony, child custody, child support agreement, and we're done. But if we can't get there, maybe we attend an all-day mediation session with a qualified mediator, usually somebody who's practiced in family law, and we can get it done there. More often even, when there's a lawsuit that's been filed for one or all of the claims that we've mentioned here, alimony, custody, child support, property division, otherwise known as equitable distribution, we'll also attend an all-day mediation. I have two coming up in the next couple of weeks. And I would say at this point that that kind of fits with something I said recently, that it's my belief after having done this for many years, you know, the court is just overloaded with cases. The attention that needs to be paid to them just cannot. It's not the fault of any judge or anybody. It's just the problem that we have too many cases in the system. And so I tell people all the time, don't look at what you saw on TV, Perry Mason, or any of those legal shows. At the end of the day, court is where you go to get your case resolved. And what does that mean, resolved? Well, it means exactly that. It means that you go to court as a last resort, because where your case is just going to be resolved. Nowhere in the word resolved can you find the letters to spell fair, rational, reasonable, or logical. They don't exist. You're just going to get a ruling, and your case will be resolved. And therefore, you will have the most success if you have a hand in guiding your case. And that includes being open to going to mediation and being a part of the resolution, as opposed to having someone who doesn't know you or your spouse, the other parent possibly, or your kids make decisions for you. Again, court's only a place where your case gets resolved, and that's not always tied into justice.
Because everybody wants to be right, Gary. It's something about, it makes us, our ego just pump up a little bit bigger. It's like, well, I was right, you were wrong, right? We always want that. We always want that, whatever that is. I only have you for about 5 more minutes, and I forgot to get to domestic violence since COVID-19. Domestic violence did not go away. In fact, I'm sure it increased.
I believe it did. You know, I don't handle a lot of those cases. There are certain family law attorneys that's what they specialize in. But I most certainly do handle them here or there. About once a month, I will have one of my family law cases where the dissolution of the marriage, the root cause or the initiating factor that causes a person, man or wife, to come to me is an allegation of domestic violence. And in fact, you know, most parties file a complaint for domestic violence, you know, down at the magistrate's office, usually in the evening, by themselves, and then come to an attorney for representation. But you're exactly right. I was in the courthouse about a month ago, and it really surprised me, especially given, you know, what the government is saying about COVID and needing to wear masks. I mean, that the hallway was packed with probably 100 to 150 people. Waiting to go into the courtroom for domestic violence hearings. So most certainly, it hasn't stopped. In fact, it's increased. And those are often the initiating factors that begin a family law case for us. We usually try to resolve it in a way that doesn't affect people's careers or otherwise. Sometimes it's unavoidable. The problem is oftentimes the domestic violence conviction also comes with some financial consequences, and like it or not, I may have to tell someone, now look, let's talk about what exactly happened and whether you'll be protected going forward now that you all are apart, because please understand that us proceeding with this may affect the child support that is flowing,
right.
The property division, the alimony. Those are unfortunate connections, but they must be stated. With that said, there's no excuse not to have a domestic violence order of protection in place if, in fact, domestic violence occurs that rises to the level of physical abuse. And the reason I say that is I want to make sure people are clear that under our domestic violence statute, it's any physical action or verbal action which rises to a level of causing the victim feel in imminent fear for their safety. Okay, so there is an opportunity to look at what was it when you're making those decisions about whether you're going to do just an injunction, a restraining order, so to speak, as opposed to the more serious aspect, which is a domestic violence protective order, which obviously can have some consequences on employment and trickle down finances, etc.
Right. It used to be the stat that, you know, most people that get divorced, like 50% of folks will get a divorce. But these days we can have some premarital counseling. We can not get married. Yeah. You know, I'm just saying, it's just so tricky, right? When it comes to marriage, you love them.
Yeah, I think people should open their eyes. As I said before, and I know people don't want to hear this, but, you know, they used to say, at least my dad told me, that, you know, buying a house is your biggest financial decision. It's not true. Marriage is your biggest business decision. And it just is, because anything you bring to the marriage, if your retirement account had 20 grand in it on the day of marriage, that's yours. And that will remain your separate property. But if it grows to 500,000, then you and she, or she and you, are splitting the growth in that. And so it makes sense. We've been going to, a lot of people, as you know, they go to religious counseling, pastoral counseling prior to marriage. It makes sense that the next day you're coming to a family law attorney to have counseling on the financial aspects of the marriage. Mm. I agree.
You need a team. Hello. Hello. Knock, knock. You need a team. You need a marital team. Because we all, only thing we care about is the bridesmaids, right? And who's going to carry that ring?
That's true.
It's those little things, Gary. Gary Coggan, attorney at law, CogganLaw.com. You have been so helpful this morning that I want to interview you again.
I hope so. I'm trying to spread the word. There are a lot of misconceptions out there, and not everybody needs to come in for a paid consult to learn some of the things I've tried to share here today.
Divorce should be free, but how are you guys going to get paid, right? The state should pay for your divorce. Go right now. It's CogganLaw.com. Gary, thank you.
You're very welcome.
Well, I am your hostess of the mostest, Francie Marie. Your 1 hour of public talk radio's up. I don't know where the time goes, but it's gone. I'll see you back here next week, same time, same station. Until we meet, darling, and one day we will. I need you to have a good week. Bye-bye, everybody.
Thank you for joining us for the Francie Marie Show, where we address issues concerning you and your family.
That's all for now. See you next week.
Please, please do not harm us. We have come to your planet for one thing, the Francie Marie Show. It's the only content we can digest.